Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join your host, Susie Bonham Craig, as we embark on another journey to open the portals of wisdom. Susie invites you to participate in the chat room and call in with your questions on 718-305-6584. And now, our journey begins.
Welcome back to our Soulmates and Journeyers of Wisdom Wide Open Radio. I'm your host, Susie Bonham Craig, this evening. And I'm a little bit rusty. It's been several months since we've been on the radio. And sometimes some space and time is needed to kind of come together and realign and perhaps take a trip back inside where you can actually tell where these insistent tugs are pulling us, you know, to bring us back to purpose. So I can certainly say that that's one of the reasons why I'm back on the radio. And I just want to send everyone a wonderful Thanksgiving gesture, not only for joining us, but for really, really setting the pace of where humanity is going. And I'm really, I'm privileged this evening because the guest that is going to be will be visiting with us this evening is actually his third time back on the show. His name is Jeff Brown, and actually the most visited guest on Wisdom Wide Open Radio, to his credit. But there began a conversation a couple of years ago based on the soul shaping journey. Jeff Brown is the author of Soul Shaping, an adventure in, a journey in self-creation. And just to give you a little bit of information about Jeff, I met Jeff actually in my inbox and Facebook just about 2 years ago. And in that little space where you see everybody's picture, were these streaming steel blue eyes looking at me. And just, you know, a gesture to connect. And there was something right there in those eyes that I saw. There was no mistake about it. And I just was very compelled to have to click and see what Jeff was all about. And there's no surprise to me why he showed up in my life in particular. And now Jeff's book, after reading that, it was very gut-wrenching and a gripping experience for me, as it has become for many over the last 2 years. Since then, Jeff has really accelerated the process of his journey just in by connecting and forming what we're calling, what Jeff has definitely named, the Soul Pod. So I'd just like to be able to open up the conversation for Jeff and I this morning. We're going to be discussing his most recent writing, which is The Apologies to the Divine Feminine, From a Warrior in Transition. This is a very, very interesting aspect of Jeff's journey that I've assimilated with, and I can't even tell or express enough how inside out this has brought me and all the people that Jeff has been connecting with. He's actually managed to generate quite a soul pod in size and nature and interest and intuitiveness. So just a little bit more about Jeff. He's actually a contributing writer to the Weekly Inspiration on ABC Good Morning America and has been published in the Washington Post and the Winnipeg Press. And I'm going to be bringing on him on just a moment. Jeff, are you there?
I'm here. I'm completely
welcome.
Here.
Welcome. Welcome back. I'm so glad you're present. Shirts on.
Right on. It's nice to hear your voice again. It really is.
Yeah, I've actually just gotten over the flu, so it needs a little adjustment. I'm sitting here drinking hot water, but just to soothe me. But welcome back again.
Thank you. Yeah, lots of good new things to talk about. Really looking forward to the opportunity to talk about the apologies. It's been such a journey, really, for me since I put the blog out in late September. It's been really a remarkable opening and I think validation of the direction that my path seems to be taking now. And there's lots to say about it.
Well, I do have a couple of questions before we go. I understand we're going to be doing something that hasn't been done to date thus far with regard to actually looking at these individual paragraphs and possibly getting some insight from you of actually what caused them to manifest on paper and, you know, why that expression was so important to be not only released on paper but out to the world. You know, and in your own, cognitive, and I guess visibility, and being able to bring forward that vulnerability. And I don't think there was any mistake in you thinking that people wouldn't respond to this in some really deep way.
Yeah. It's funny, when I started the International Year of the Woman group on Facebook a few years ago. And, you know, it was kind of the same idea as this apology. It was just not as developed in the writing. And the response to the group was strong, but it wasn't like a viral response. But now 2 years later, the apology came through me and came through me quickly. And really the response to it suggests that there has been some, and I don't want to overstate this concept of the shift because, you know, I believe in divine perspiration. I believe that this is really the school of Hart Knox and that real change takes time. But having said that, there does seem to have been some kind of an opening where a writing like this could have that kind of a response, a viral response so quickly. I find that, to begin with, one of the most interesting things about it, like what happened in the collective unconscious in that period of time that made this kind of piece that much more impactful and resonant, and not just resonant for women, but resonant also, particularly in the last month, I would say, with men. I'm actually interested, because you're in this milieu so deeply and do the show, how you would even understand and explain that shift. What's happened, you know, that makes this land so much more heartfully now?
Well, honestly, Jeff, and it was an instant resonation for me as well as reading it, because I was really surprised that when I heard you talk about how you were going to write a book on this, you know, Trinity type relationship between God, self, and God, and, you know, with the male and the female energies coming together. There was such a possible relationship out there. And to have you begin with an apology, what I can say from, and I really can only see through the eyes of self, but what I've heard a lot of people respond to was that the International Year of the Woman was great. You know, the heart thing that you had on Facebook was great too. And it was a theme that I think touches us endearingly, but from a distance. And I think what happened with the apology is that you got and you touched a point of vulnerability that brought things to the surface for people that had really never gone there before. They've been traveling with it for a long time. And yes, it has been the time where we've been, you know, casting away the masks and, you know, letting the veils fall. But this was an outright, downright committed. I mean, what you committed was really big. It was really big. It was a voice that so many had wanted to hear from a divine feminine standpoint, from a woman's point of view. At least that's how I felt. And at the same time, it opened the door for men to really come and be able to say, hey, I'm going to take down this veil, even if it's just between me and me, and really take a look at this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the fact, I guess there's always that hesitation before men might open their mouth, or anyone for that matter, to see what other people's responses were. And, you know, it only took one. And I think that then it snowballs from there. And I think that's how change manifests. And like you said, it is the time. Now is the time. I don't think you could pick the more perfect time.
Yeah, well, I picked, or the Divine Mother picked, or whoever picked it. I mean, that's a whole other question, which is, where does this stuff come from, you know? But it is interesting for me, as I anticipate, or as I guess, internally ready myself to begin to write another book. And, you know, I've, as you know, I've always intended to write as my second book, A Higher Consciousness Love Story, which goes far beyond the love chapter in Soul Shaping. That, you know, the first thing that comes through me that really relates thematically to that book is an apology. You know, is something that is acknowledging of and an attempt to heal that which stands between us. You know, and that, as I understand it like that, it makes sense in terms of my own journey. You know, it's like my own, the times that I've dipped my toe into, say, something called soulmate experiences, you know, and I know they come in many forms, but I mean in the more intense forms. What I've encountered after the crack open, and often even in the heart of the heart crack open, you know, we're what stands in the way, you know, both on the collective unconscious level, because I knew that I wasn't just tapping into my own field of experience, but also on the more localized field, you know, the emotional debris that stands between us internally and then between us externally in relation to one another, the other outside of ourselves. And, you know, not just the emotional debris that we can trace back to particular experiences in this lifetime with family history and so on, but all the way back, you know, all the way back in time, and, you know, our issues around vulnerability and what comes up for the male structure when he has to kind of stop being hypervigilant and focus to hold everything together to protect self and other, and just to let that heart open to this unknown terrain where he can't quite manage reality in the same ways that he did, you know. And I think that that's what this is about for me, as I'm beginning to understand it on an individual level. It's my own wrestling with, but also preparing myself to write about something in a grounded way, you know, as opposed to like a Harlequin romance that really doesn't get into the nitty-gritty of, you know, what blocks it, what keeps that bridge from happening, what... But, you know, and apology is a good place to start, not just because we have to acknowledge what we've done or what gender has done or what humanity has done, but because it's so important for everyone to feel seen and acknowledged in their experience. You know, that lack of attunement in our early life and our primal experience is what sets us off into therapy for so many years, because that attunement, that feeling really seen in our experience, is what grows us, you know. And I think gender to gender, so many of us would acknowledge, and women in particular, that they really just have felt as though they've been invisible in relationship, and what they've been through has not been seen and acknowledged. And that is almost the thing that landed more in terms of the feedback I've gotten, not just the apology, but the I see you, you know, I see what we've done, and, you know, I want to acknowledge that, right? Yeah.
Right, and but here again, and this was originally one of my questions. You know, why an apology? And before you answer that, you know, there have been several responses as to people who are on their spiritual path saying, you know, I've come to a point where, you know, I'm perfect just as I am, and you know, all this apology or blame or things like this are really, you know, of an unhealthy ego nature. There's no reason to apologize. Acknowledgement is fine right where it is, because we've gotten, you know, past the point that apology is really not necessary. Could you comment on that? Like, why did it begin with an apology?
Well, I don't know these people in any real way who talk about how we're beyond the point of apology. I mean, if we're talking about the spiritual bypass movement, the I'm not feeling any pain, my pain body movement, I'm not identified with any of my pain movement, the ego is unreal movement, I don't take those movements very seriously as genuinely spiritual. My spirituality, as you know, and we've discussed it on the show, is inextricably linked with the emotional body. I don't understand how anybody grows in their spirituality independent of their interface with their emotional material.
Right, so, and oftentimes I've heard you say that, you know, spirituality is reality. I mean, this is
I make no distinction between it. And, you know, sell your soul
right.
is one of my primary concepts, C-E-L-L, your soul, the
mm-hmm.
idea that repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. So I don't know how anybody, other than those who want to flee the pain body and call that flight enlightenment, can possibly move forward genuinely in a grounded, earthbound, in this body way, body as temple for spiritual expansion, indistinguishable from spirituality, without dealing with the emotional material that not only are we holding on an individual level, but even if you're convinced that you've worked through all your stuff, and I haven't met too many that have really done that, but even if that's true or reasonably true, what do you do with the collective unconscious material that carries forward and is held in the cell?
Mm.
What do you do with the, even if you're a woman, if you believe in past lives, you've been a man at some point along the way, what do you do with all that holding and that material? See, I think this apology landed, you know, and it landed for some bypassers too. Like I would get emails from them, who people who previously would talk about how they'd worked it all out, and who were it's almost as though something in this went underneath the surface of the bypass, right, and got right back into the tissue, you know? Because in the tissue, there's still so much pain. There really is. And that doesn't mean we can't have happy, fulfilled lives and honor our callings and know a lot of bliss, but there's still a lot of pain in the human organism and in the soul pod. And I think really where we're really at, if we get out of bypass language, because is apology is where it's at. I mean, you know, Alexander Lowen was showing us how to temper tantrum 20 years ago. 20 years is nothing in terms of human development.
Right.
Growers are inchworms. We need to apologize. And maybe, you know, for a lot of people during the time when feminism grew so intensely, you know, maybe there really wasn't a space for men to apologize from a genuine place, like maybe from more of a reaction. This came out of me. It came out of me from a very non-defensive place. It was, like, just very clean. I didn't feel attacked in my masculinity. It just felt like, okay, this is right on for this moment. This, here we are, you know?
Mm.
Like that. And maybe that's a more... maybe that's the next step. Like, maybe the first step was that women had to be able to stand up and find voice and know that they could protect themselves and create rule of law that would support that. And then the next step maybe is for men to now step up and come out from the shadows and go, okay, you know, like, stop hiding and just come up and just, like, make some admissions and acknowledgments and apologies from a really genuine, non-reactive place, because I think there's something much more effective about that, you know.
Well, sure, and I know some of the women's responses were, you know what, I'm tired of the apologies. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Heard it all before.
You know, you got to, let's walk the talk now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I was kind of screaming a little bit inside, like, shh, there's more to come here. I want to hear this, because for me, this was a relief that brought me to my knees. This was an unanswered prayer of eons and eons and eons of, you know, feminine, you know, thwarting. And it was just such a relief to hear something like this. This was like a dream, you know, it just to acknowledge that a lot of what the feminine has been feeling, and I know speak personally for me about all the sitting and you know, providing the open space for people, for men to, or partners or lovers to really shine their best light and sitting there no matter what, no matter how long it was going to take, you know, and then to see your prayers answered through, you know, this vehicle called, you know, Jeff Brown and the Apology, you know, which instantly, I think, provided relief of a lot of that, you know, carrying of that baggage.
Well, you know, it's like, and how beautiful is that, right? You know, it's like, you just channel your voice, as you know, and it lands where it lands. I mean, you don't, it's never going to penetrate every defense structure. And for people who've really been burnt, I could see why this would seem almost indistinguishable from some of the stories they've been told for men in their lives. But really what I think of this is like a call, a statement of intentionality or possibility. You know, it feels to me like it, even though there's a little bit of an opening to receive it, that really what it is a statement for the future, like a trumpeting forward, a vision of possibility. Now, parts of it are very archaic and relate back to old experiences and have a primal element to them, but I think in a way... I didn't think that by writing this suddenly all my brothers were going to be able to embody this. I didn't even think by writing it that I was going to suddenly be able to fully embody it. We still carry this male seed forward, but I think when you put stuff like this out there, it becomes something a little ahead on the path for us to work our way towards. And, you know, at first, really, it was only women responding to it. And I got some hostile emails from men. A few really hostile emails. But the last month or so, I think I've had about as many responses from men as I have from women, which I think is really remarkable, you know. They had to, sit with it and integrate
mm-hmm.
it.
That's what I meant, if it was just between them and them, you know.
Well, I think the stuff I've been written to a lot about couples getting together and doing apologies now, and people working with this as a therapeutic tool in couples therapy, but for most of these guys that wrote me, it was really a private matter. You know, it was like, can I see myself in this? You know, and some couldn't see some of themselves in it. You know, and some men wrote and said, one guy wrote, he's so funny because he's such a sweet guy, and he wrote and he said, I'm still trying to figure out what I did wrong, right?
Yeah.
So right? Because he's been like a worshiper of the mother and grandmother, you know. And didn't step back and see it in like an archetypal terms, maybe more, but like I think that men are picking it up a little. It's just getting picked up a little like that, and you know, I think that's just fantastic. You know, it has such an evocative quality to it that it makes sense that women would be able to go to the heart with it more quickly than many of my brothers who really are like not really familiar with this terrain so much. It's like a foreign language. It takes a little bit more time to integrate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of women that would be ready to stick this video in someone's face. You know, a partner, a husband, a lover, even a past, you know, relationship or loveship, as you call it, to, you know, to try and heal the rifts there. You know, and as it is, like when we learn anything new, we go to that extreme. You know, where we want to just really act upon it. But that's interesting, though, when you say that you're not even sure if you could really, you know, fully embody this, yet you have a vision of it. And that came from, you know, is that like setting a goal and you're not sure whether you're capable of it? Where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked that way a lot with myself, that I'm like, it's like a bifurcated or a trifurcated consciousness, that I'm sort of in my waking daily adapted consciousness, you know, where I'm like whatever I am in my daily life interactively, and then I also have, and you know, I refer to it as Little Missy, the voice of my guiding angel or inner daemon in soul shaping, that is really kind of always with me, that is holding a more heightened vision of possibility, or a more inclusive vision of possibility. In other words, a pathway that is like, you know, the most complete pathway that I could walk on in this life, and keeps holding to the belief that it's possible for me. And then, of course, other parts, defenses and shame self, and, you know, the different other parts that work against that vision of possibility that don't. And the culture, which really doesn't support us in moving towards excavating and honoring divine purpose. So we have all of that up against us. So, yeah, I mean, I think in a way it's kind of like a harbinger, or like a symbol of where I can go in myself too. You know, I think I live and come from my heart a lot now in my life, and in particularly in my calling, my pathways in that way. But there are places here where I feel as though I still have work to do, and that this is a, you know, now I've written the apology, I darn well better live up to it, right? I mean, you know, because there it is. I mean, if I don't, it's like a lot of people could hold it up in my face now. So,
well, you know, that's funny. I mean, those are, I guess, you know, excerpts from long ago about really, you want to commit to something, you know, say it out loud. And, you know, if you don't hold yourself accountable, they'll be sure to lead to other people that will. So,
well, at this point, that's exactly it. I mean, that's the biggest, one of the biggest problems I often say I create for myself now is I've got to live up to being that Soul Shaper dude, right? And it's, And it's easy for me now in terms of honoring my calling to write or do this kind of work, because that just burns so brightly through me and I can't contain it. But interactively, where other stuff comes up psycho-emotionally and other patterns and behaviors can emerge, that's where it's sometimes more difficult. And I do feel in myself still, and I don't think this is uniquely male by any means, a part of me that wants to be a goof and really, really wants to fuck up. I mean, that really wants to, because the not just so much just my ego getting carried away with me, but the nature of the projection when you start to bring your work out into the world like this is so kind of unreal on a lot of levels that, you know, sometimes I understand why some people, as they become more public, start to crash and burn, because I think on some level they actually want to return to being human. And so I feel that resistance to all of this presentation in a way. Sometimes, too, you know, it's like, it's hard to hold to this, our purest intentionality in this world at this stage of human development. I think it's difficult. I certainly find it difficult sometimes.
Yeah, but why, Jeff, why can't that include goofing off? Why can't that, I mean, life is supposed to be fun, right?
No, you're 100%, you're right. No, you're 100%. Goofing off, maybe I'm using the wrong term. There's a part of me that wants to undermine it. That's maybe more what I mean. And I know where that part, I know parts of where that part comes from, and it, because it's a lot of heat on, to be able to, you know, it's like when you send out the trumpet call, which sort of clarifies and identifies, say, your ultimate vision of possibility for who you are. Well, that's beautiful, but actually living that, in the vulnerability of that, there's something about the vulnerability with no escape hatches of saying, really recognizing why you're here in your lifetime, you know, that is, it's quite, it can be frightening, you know. There's a vulnerability, there's a risk in that, you know, that, it's like, you know, it's like when you're always a seeker, it's not quite as risky, because, like, you haven't really found it yet. But when you kind of figure out you found what you're up to here in this lifetime, it's more vulnerable, you know. I can see why people want to stay seekers forever. It's not as risky. You know, they don't have to worry about not achieving the goal. They don't have to worry about screwing it up, you know, because they're always looking for it, right? But I'm not really looking for it now. I'm not really looking for it. You know, I really kind of, like, know what my soul's agenda is for the next little while. And,
But I would think that, you know, that undermining part really just comes from more reason to fuel, you know, to fuel ahead. And it shows up at certain times to see, okay, how much, you know, flexibility do I really have here? And, you know, can I move a step closer? I mean, the Dalai Lama still laughs his ass off. You know what I'm saying?
As far as I can see, all he ever does is laughs his ass off. Every time I see the guy, he's giggling. It's hysterical.
Right.
Yeah, but he's not undermining. He's just giggling.
No, true. Well, you know what? Do we really know that? Do we really know what's going on underneath?
No.
You know, if you're talking about outwardly taking a step and saying, yeah, no, I really want to undermine this in public, hey, you know, it's your journey. Your journey. No judgment.
Yeah.
No judgment. But, you know, if you're finding it difficult, I don't know. You know why? I'm not there. I'm still seeking. I couldn't tell you what that would be like, but I certainly honor where you're coming from with that. Let's get into the actual apology itself.
Great.
A little bit. Is there, perhaps you can bring up one particular paragraph that you feel whether people have resonated with most or one that really shines for you, and maybe that you're not in, a complete space to say, you know, I really got it there, or vice versa, one that you have.
Well, let's talk about the sexuality paragraph. Why don't I read that? Maybe that's a good way to start.
Your voice.
Paragraph 6. I apologize for a sexuality that was objectifying and disconnected from the heart. I know you long for real intimacy, a merging of our souls along the heart-genital highway, but there were too many defenses around my heart, and no bridge could form between our souls. There were moments when your loving ways freed me from my body masks, but I had no template to stand in that heart fire. I'm sorry for this, for I know that the path you longed for was the path to God. Why don't we start with that little lightweight paragraph?
Okay. let's go deep.
You know, like for me, in my own experience, my sexuality, I remember like my very first like real lover at 18, and I remember being surprised to find how emotional I was around intimacy and how deeply connective and affectionate I was. And because I didn't know that really lived inside of me. It was like the union or the call that out of me or something, you know. Mostly before that, I was just kind of a bratty boy, you know. And I remember, like, throughout my 20s in particular, really feeling as though I kind of went back and forth between, like, that kind of tender connectiveness and a more objectifying structure. You know, I used to think, I had this one wonderful girlfriend for 3 or 4 years, and we had a lot of sex, and I was just, you know, it was just sex, and I remember, and I loved it, but I wasn't fully aware of her. Like there was, right? It was like 21. I was just wasn't so aware of her.
Right. This is what we do. Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember having this thought. So my witness observer was saying, you know, Jeff, this is almost like rape. I mean, not legally rape, because she was, you know, being a dutiful 21-year-old girlfriend and putting up with the sex-addicted boyfriend, right? But there was another level in which I remember having my witness was talking to me, and it was like I could sense that really she wasn't there for it. Independent of duty, she wasn't really in her sexuality and having the physical pleasure and all of the rest of that. And you understand? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think that I remember feeling okay with that, because I remember feeling like I didn't really fully want to be there for it, right? You know, it was like that was the dance. It was like I'd have a little opening and feel like the heart and genitals were connected, and then it would be like I really wanted to pull away, you know. And I remember feeling that this feeling when we would get really warm and cozy and mushy and connective, that there was something, and this was the male structure, there was something about that state of being that was like inimical to my going out into the world and building a business and building my life from nothing. It was like I really had it clear in me that to be goal-centered and warrior, I needed to keep it objectified.
Yes.
And I needed to be able to stay in complete control and not get into emotions that were going to pull me out of my focus in structure building from nothing, like an animal in the rest of my life, you know? There was that intrinsic conflict between those two states of being, at least as I understood it at the time. So I would go into the opening place, and then I would, for the most part, pull out. And I think when I wrote that paragraph, I was feeling very connected to the frustration of my girlfriends, particularly in my 20s, when I was determined to keep it as objectifying as possible. You know,
You know, I love hearing this from you, only because from where I come from, I keep thinking back about, you know, that whole objectifying thing, and then it was not just the role, you know, of the male structure, because I distinctively remember, you know, thinking, you know, I was never going to have sex with somebody I wasn't in love with. You know, that was just something, don't even ask me where it came from. It was just this, you know, steadfast commitment I'd made to myself. Yet I had no idea what, like, really being in love was all about, right? So what would happen was, you know, if I was going ahead and having sex with someone, I must have assumed that I was in love with this person. So you can imagine what kind of relationships I had early on. You know, and then there was living up to those relationships without even understanding, or like you said, really being fully connected there in my own sexuality and what that was all about. So I really appreciate where you come from with this, because I just don't think it's a male thing.
You mean
in fact, I got a lot from the whole entire apology based on that. Which, you know, we can't go into the whole thing here, but there's a lot of myself as a woman that I've seen in this apology as well. Maybe not the same exact way that you're talking about, but, you know, in our own growth, in our own journeys, and in our own expressions through our experiences, you know, what was actually shadowed there, or what we were trying to figure out along the way.
Well, you know, the apology doesn't have to be for women. I mean, it says apologies to the divine feminine. That can be the divine feminine that exists inside of a man. From a warrior in transition can be from a female, armored female warrior in transition. I mean, we make the assumption that this was only written or channeled or whatever it was, transmitted from man to woman, but not really necessarily true at all. I've known many, many warrior females, and I have known some men who were deeply connectively in their hearts. You know, my best friend is somebody who never wanted to have intimacy with a woman unless he felt completely and absolutely in love with her. I mean, it was absolutely essential to him. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, it's transgender in the sense that it's, I think, inclusive of, you know, it's complicated in terms of, and it gets even more complicated when we start talking about the soul's journey and this idea. If you take on this idea, and I believe in this, that we've really been everything, at least at one point along the way, then it gets even more interesting. Who are we apologizing to, and who's doing the apologizing?
Well, it all exists. It all exists in there, and at any point in time, one of it comes forth. And rather than trying to distinguish, oh, that's my, you know, my feminine side, or that's my male side, I mean, I've, you know, adopted that role shifting throughout my entire life just because of what's shown up on my path. You know, but I will tell you that there were many times where the shift took place, say from, you know, being in my full feminine expression and then having to think that taking on a warrior role was necessary, you know, at that point in time. But I can tell you that there was quite a bit in offness while that happened.
Sorry, quite a bit
something.
Of offness?
Yeah, there was... to give an idea that, you know, if I'd be in a relationship and I was talking about, you know, sitting there and just providing that space and let this person shine, let them see themselves. And, you know, people used to say, you know, what are you, crazy? Get your head out of the sand, you know. And I'd be, no, I don't think so. I'm going to sit a little longer. And they're going like, are you kidding me? You know, get off of it already. This guy is crazy, or this guy is never going to give you blah, 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 blah. And those were their expectations, not so much mine, because I haven't really revealed them. But in times of my frustration, I wanted to take on that warrior role. You know, okay, I'm going to step into this, because if it works for them, it's got to work for me too, you know, and lay out the mines on the battlefield. But intuitively I knew that was just a big waste of time. Those power plays, you know, that, you know, lady gay from inside was going screaming like, no, this is not it. You know, this is not the way to go. So that's what I'm saying. I tried to adapt those certain warrior roles, you know, and not just that, but within the workforce and, you know, really trying to balance what was, you know, being a single mom, you know, and having to find out what those roles were all about and understanding them and understanding what was going on intimately in, you know, a man-a-woman relationship that I was having, understanding those dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah, a little difficult to understand when most of my brothers don't really have the emotional awareness of what's happening for them. I mean, I think that that's what has to shift, and is we have to, men have to start understanding emotional processes better, you know. That communication that women often want to happen can't happen if men don't spend a little bit of time inside getting to know their emotional terrain, you know. And I think that as the world moves away from, I mean, you know, what is this? The warrior is just about being armored. It's an armored structure, right, where there's a lack, an absence of fluidity, the absence of vulnerability. And really, it is intrinsic to the survivalist world we inhabit. Men, women, we all understand what it's like to armor up to get through our day. Most of us, or many of us, are doing it all the time, every day, really, on some level, out of touch with our subtle self, our vulnerable self. If this apology is about anything, it's about a movement away from survivalism as a way of being in the direction of a more soulful way of living our lives. So rather than adapting personality to the ways of the marketplace, what we have to do to get food on the table, to reach a stage where we mostly all have food on the table, and we can begin to shape our personality in alignment with who we are on a spiritual level. So if you believe in divine purpose, that your personality becomes a direct manifestation of divine purpose. And that world, we would still have some of the positive aspects of the male consciousness, the capacity for assertiveness, right, like the vitality, of that kind of vitality, all of that. But I think what we would have, which many of us don't have now, primarily men, but not only men, is the we'd be living from a much more vulnerable and open place. I mean, I think that's what really this apology is about. It's like an invitation in the direction of a more open and genuinely subtle and vulnerable way of being, where the heart is open. You know, I mean, I'm a heart path guy, so really, to me, that, you know, that's when that my heart is open, I feel like I'm deeply here. And that's, you know, not in the direction of a heady structure, a disembodied structure, a spiritual bypass structure, because to me those have a paternalistic, disembodied, heart-severed quality to them, but to move into the direction, which wisdom, women often know very well, the wisdom of the heart path, and to create a world like that where, and I think once you pull out of survivalism, we get out of these linear...
Jeff, oops, I think we lost Jeffrey. Sorry about that. Well, hopefully he'll call in. That was a really important passage coming out there I wanted to hear. Let's give it a few more minutes and see if he gives a call in. But actually, I'm really wanting to continue this on and on and on. I have pages here in front of me. But I want to thank everyone for listening. And while we wait for Jeff, perhaps you have some questions or some comments. You're welcome to call in on the switchboard at 718-305-6584 and press 1 to get into the queue. And then I'll know that if you want to ask a question or make a comment thus far, that we, Jeff's been able to present to us with us on the show today. And if there's questions in the chat room, I believe we do have one. And Cindy, I'll get that out as soon as he gets back online. I thank you for your question. Let's see here. Oh, hold on one second.
I'm here.
Oh, we lost you, Skype Master.
I don't know what happened. I must have been talking too much.
No, it was actually right in the middle of something great. So do you remember where you were?
Absolutely no idea. Yeah, it was a diatribe. It was a karmic diatribe. I don't remember.
Well, we're talking about, you know, not from a disembodied, not a disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah, just the idea that really the apology is an invitation towards a way of being that is genuinely heart-centered, you know, and to And and the reason why I don't think that the fact that there was an opening, a receptivity to it, is a symbol of a profound and radical shift in our consciousness is because I'm always aware of how many people on the planet are still in a survivalist structure, including myself to an extent. And I think that survivalism as a way of being is what keeps the armor up. So the more we move in the direction of a world where we're, so many of us aren't vibrating on the root chakra level for survival's sake, the more we can move together in the direction of a reality where we're living from our hearts and where these gender divisions... So in other words, where gender becomes like we're celebrating the healthy aspects of being whatever it means to be male and the healthy aspects of whatever it means to be female, rather than getting, I think it's survivalism is what pulls us into a negative way of experiencing gender. Yeah.
So when you're talking about survivalism, I mean, you're referring to Maslow, right? You're referring to that hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, Maslow was talking about culture, not just individual, if you think about it. I mean, he was really talking about where the collective is, where most of us are worried about money and having enough food on the table, on the planet, you know, and even those of us who seem to have money compared to most people on the planet, it doesn't take much for us to come right back into that root chakra anxiety. And I think the moment we get into root chakra anxiety as a humanity, the tendency is to armor up and adapt our personality to become anything we have to become in order to get through the day. And when that starts to happen, there's like we're splitting off then from divine purpose as our defining...
Well, that's when I get sick. That's when I get sick.
Right, right. Well, because, see, now we're at a point where we're crossing this bridge a little bit, where this idea of divine purpose or who you really are is starting to matter, but we're still not structurally set up to really be able to, like, live that as a way of being in the culture. So you have a moment when you realize you're born to, like, be a singer, but then you don't have any money to make it happen. And you can't just leave your job and give everything up to do that because the culture's not economically going to support you unless you become a giant star, so then everything falls apart. So now this is a very frustrating time in the culture because we're opening to the realization that we want to be more than just whatever we have to become to put food on the table, but we're not structurally really set up for it. And, you know, I think that that's why...
Yeah, but if we're waiting for those structures, I mean, doesn't the shift in those structures come from, you know, the people who believe it and then they see it rather than I have to see it, you know, then I'll believe it?
Yeah, you mean we have to make it happen. Well, yeah,
exactly.
I'm someone who's made it happen, but at the same time, absolutely. But I think we will reach a point, humanity, I have every faith, where there'll be societal structures that'll be set up to help to really encourage people in those directions.
Hope to see that in my lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I do. You know, interesting. We had a question in the chat room, and it was probably up some time ago, but I just caught it. If you wouldn't mind, this is a question for Jeff, if it fits in or if you have time. How did you deal with free will after Little Missy showed you a path, a door? How did you decide that you should jump in or stay in seeker mode?
Or stay in what mode?
Seeker mode.
You mean, so like why did I choose to take...
No, I think, how did you decide whether you should jump? Or just, jump, I guess, means...
Yeah, like make a leap of faith into your true path or something.
Right.
Well, I mean, I didn't, the book... indicates it was no easy process for me because I had a lot of resistance and a lot of shame and a lot of survivalism anxiety and a lot of you don't get away from where you came from and all that stuff. And, you know, the whole book was really about the first part, my inner tussle. But I would say that really what, it's almost like it was like 51% of me was pulling me in her direction and 49% in another. It wasn't like cut and dried. And I don't still fully understand why it is that I listen to her. I'd always want to have like a perfect answer, but I really don't. I just felt in myself that I didn't have a choice but to honor the path. It was the path of no choice. And
But is that free will? I think she's looking at her. Were you using a free? Was it looking at little Missy? Looking at the direction you were going, perhaps, and then, you know, using that. I mean, you made choices when you say I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, there were. I think that the soul shaping journey is some combination of determinism and free will. So, the determinism were the soul scriptures that lived inside of me as to what my path was. So that was like some pre-encoded path, and not a linear, like there was space in it, like I could do work to invite people in a surrender direction in a lot of different ways. So that was determinism. The free will was the ongoing choice as to whether or not I was going to honor that determined path or not. And there was that was the scariest part in a way. I remember there was that moment when I realized it was like, okay, the only one who's going to decide this is you. It's like there's no more mommy. There really never really was anyway. There's nobody else who's. It really is your own path of self creation, yeah. And but I'm not sure I'm fully answering the question in the way that she's intending it.
Yeah, well, I know for a fact that she's read your book, okay. So I think she may be stepping back into the soul shaping book and talking about, you know, at those times when. Showed the path, and when you say I was left no choice, you know, was that your free will and choosing? You know, what's the difference?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I could have decided, yes, absolutely. It was my it's all mixed together, though. It was my free will, my choice to decide whether or not I was going to honor my determined path, right? I mean, it was like all...
Right. So that was the power of that. Like, you asked about free will, and that was the power of that. Okay. Okay, good. I also have a comment in the chat room from someone I believe is in Australia and really can't call in, but just saying that they're not feeling comfortable with the feminine apologies yet. And I'm just curious to whether that has been an expression that you've heard before. Like, what is it maybe that's about getting comfortable with it?
Well, I don't know that we're fully ready to, I mean, you know, maybe if tens of thousands of men were standing up. You know, it's like, you know, Arjuna and Gay Hendricks have started the Conscious Men's Manifesto, trying to invite men in the direction of standing up together and, you know, ushering in an era of goddess worship and so on. So, like, there's a movement starting. But I think... At this stage, most people really aren't at the stage in their development or our collective development where they can really take this on as deeply true, you know, fully true. I think we're going to need a whole lot more of my brothers to stand up and really be at a stage where they can really recognize the validity of this and take it on in their hearts in a really genuine way, you know. You know, I mean, like, I'm not unrealistic about this. This just moved through me, and it lands where it lands, but I don't think it's some completely... I mean, it's timely to the extent that the gate was opened, but it's not timely to the extent that it's fully actualizable at this stage. I don't think it is.
Well, that's certainly the beginning, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's why, you know, when I asked, you know, why an apology? Because, you know, I was getting some confusing feedback from, you know, people I was forwarding it to about, you know, what do you mean apology and blah, 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 blah. And to be honest with you, I didn't want to ignore them, but I chose to ignore it because in my own personal journey, I was more interested in moving forward from there, you know, and not to really negate, you know, or degrade anyone else who wasn't interested in, you know, listening. But those aren't people that I can possibly serve, you know.
Right.
Do you have that same experience?
You know, I've had mostly, I mean, I don't think the negative responses don't get sent to me very often. I mostly get the positive responses. But, you know, I've had a fair number of more bypass-oriented perspectives, you know, that we're like all one, that this is like about separation, this brings us back to division, that, you know, to suggest, you know, the male structure is an illusion. You know, it's all an illusion. It's an illusion until you get a bullet to the head. And like, you know, it's not an illusion anymore, right? So, but it's all an illusion. Like, all that kind of disembodied, the ego is unhealthy, the real being lives outside of the behavioral body, you know, how we interact with one another, none of it's real, like all of that stuff that people jump to because it makes the pain go away. But so I've had some of that streaming through, and I don't really ever know how to interface with it because it just doesn't feel like it's distinctly human to me. I don't know. It feels almost like trying to interact with something more like an automaton, or I don't. I'm such a humanoid, so I don't. You know,
with
I don't
an
know
ego
what to,
shtick, yes.
I got an ego shtick, so I don't know what to do with this. It's all an illusion, monkey business. I mean, you know, there was a time when I was in tremendous amount of pain that I wanted to believe it was all an illusion, but now that I'm not in quite as much pain, I'm happy to entertain the idea that it's actually all quite real. And that doesn't mean you don't have choices, but that really, this really is my foot, and this is really Susie on the radio, and we have some apologies to make, and like that. You know, now the hostile male stuff was a whole other stream, and more in the beginning, you know, men that often looked on their Facebook profile pictures like bruisers really were not very pleased with the apology to the divine feminine from a warrior in transition. But they seem to have faded lately for some interesting reason. Yeah.
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, the light can go on and it's very, very dim, you know, and then just because it beckoned us just to take a slight glimpse, you know, it's about, let's just push the door open a little wider, you know. I do have to say this has been really quite a journey for me through the apologies and the gratitudes, because in sitting in those spaces that I've done, and, you know, here's an interesting thing, and I find this really interesting, and maybe it's like that for other people out there too, but when I came into this world, I was in the bubble. I was in the bubble of knowing quite a bit, I believe. My knowing was more aligned with who I truly was coming forward. And even growing up in those awkward stages, it was the grounded aspect of being human that was very, very foreign to me. And my journey through life has really been opening up to the groundedness of my life, you know, where, because to me that was all a bunch of chaos for me. It didn't make any sense to me how to ground myself in, you know, those hierarchy of needs and how to ground myself. So here I am taking a very similar journey as a warrior in transition who's been grounded, you know, in that warrior aspect, and trying to open up the heart, where I'm trying to balance what was going on in my heart and open up to the groundedness of life. And I'm finding that very difficult, but here we're meeting on the same plane.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think we vibrate, we're in resonance with each other because we work from the ground up, right? You know, it's working from a more detached structure. You know, it's like this whole idea, you know, that, I mean, I understand the whole idea that some of this is an illusion. What for me is an illusion is the belief that my neurotic localized self is everything. That's an illusion. But once I get that and begin to come back down into my body and try to ground in this being, this physical being on this Mother Earth, then the next step for me is really understanding that it's quite real, you know, and that I only seem to ever move forward when I'm down in my body experiencing my emotional processes as really authentic and legitimate, you know, and beginning to understand that my identification of self, while there can be misidentification, properly interpreted, I, as Jeff Brown, you know, really is spiritually right on, and it is the karmic field from which my soul's lessons are harvested. And it, without this Jeff Brown identity, broadly and authentically interpreted, I have no way in which to grow forward, right? It all starts with Earth, you know. Soul shaping really is a soul-to-soul philosophy, S-O-L-E to S-O-U-L. And because whenever I did it the other way, you know, the love chapter in soul shaping is a great example of it. I went straight to the sky with her. And while that was a fantastic crack open because it gave me a broader, vaster vision of possibility than I otherwise would have had, in my linear localized place, at the same time it was completely unsustainable because there was no earth to it, right? The better way would have been started from the earth, right, and worked our way up.
I guess that was my decision then, coming forth, is trying to figure out how to ground, because I feel like the rest of it is just, it just came natural, and that is home, you know?
Right.
So I think that's been my challenge, is to really find balance within that, and maybe all those people screaming at me along the way about, you know, getting real.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
So you're saying you started with the sky and worked your way down to the earth.
Yeah, that's exactly what, but yet here we are in this same ground is what I'm saying. You know, I don't believe, you know, in coincidences. This has been a very serendipitous relationship, you know, country to country and, you know, man to woman and guest to show and author to reader. You know, it's just, and the journey itself has just been incredible, because I'm looking at it a side I'm so familiar with, and yet trying to ground myself in that in a space that I'm unfamiliar with.
Right. Gotcha.
Right. Whatever that means. Right.
Well, no, absolutely. Well, it's funny because I experience you as a very grounded being. Now, this may be as a result of the work that you've done to make that happen, but you know, you have a real no bullshit quality about you that I love. You know, I don't pick up the sky as much as I pick up in the resonance the earth connection itself.
Now that's interesting. We'll have to take that on in another episode because we are running out of time. I know I don't want to keep you over, but I did want to mention you're having your first screening of your first movie, Carmageddon. Is that this evening?
It's they're about 60 minutes in right now. That's where I'm going right afterwards. Yeah, tonight's the
okay. First. All right. Can you just share a little bit about what will become after the screening?
Well, the screening is mostly with professionals in the filmmaking field, and God knows I'm not one of them. Just to get feedback on our final cutdowns. We're just doing some stuff around legals and so forth and permissions with still photos and stuff, and we're going to maybe do a little bit more editing. So this is really a feedback watch. We've been waiting forever to have this happen, and so right now they're doing that. And after that, we'll go to festival with the film. We'll apply to the big four or five festivals, like Cannes in Toronto and Sundance, and we'll see what happens. You know, I mean, we'd like to do at least one of them, and then we'd also like to move out in the direction of doing a number of smaller kind of folksier festivals. I think that'd be a whole lot of fun, and then we'll see what happens with the film. The film's pretty fantastic for people who are seeking and who are interested in grounded spirituality, and, you know, Ram Dass is in the film, and Sean Korn, and Deva Premal, and everyone, they're all brilliant. They're just bang on brilliant, and it's movies very evocative and heartfelt, you know, like Bhagavan Das, very charged, and at the same time, you know, endeavors to achieve some degree of wisdom that people can resonate with. It's been a very hard journey. It's been like a labor of hate for the most part for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to really enjoy it, and because it's really, we've got a brilliant editor, and it's come together, and yeah. So it'll be in the system, and also we'll start excerpting probably in 2011, so people will have a chance to see stuff on YouTube and all that.
Yeah, this has really been great, Jeff, and you know, by no means are we finished or even complete here. I do want to apologize. There were questions coming up in the chat room that we didn't get to, and you know, I ask those people to hang on, either connect with us at Facebook or connect with Jeff at soulshaping.com.
Yeah.
My co-host Solana has been in the chat room delivering all of your links to both the videos on YouTube as well as soulshaping.com site. So we hope, you know, continue this journey on, even with your questions, you know. Save them all, because I'm sure that we'll be having Jeff come back. And thanks so much. And I so honor your journey and the time an effort that, you know, you following your path has really brought to a lot of us. I'm really grateful.
Right on. You too, hon. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you again, everyone, for listening. I know this show was scheduled for 90 minutes. I wasn't aware that Jeff had to leave for the screening of his movie, and I'm sure that's, you know, far more important than sitting with me right now for, where, you know, 5 years of effort going into this. But I really want to sincerely thank everyone for visiting with us this evening. We will have Jeff back on the show. That's an absolute commitment that the both of us have made to you. And thanks again for joining us. And if you do have any questions, I can pass on to Jeff. Please email us at info@wisdomwideopen.com, as well as any feedback. I'm sure he'll be, you know, on top of that and really being interested to hear what people have to say about the apologies or about the movies, how you were moved, and, you know, what insights you have, because it really, really, it all determines on where our collective is going and whether this resonation takes place with you, whether there's other ideas that you have. You know, we're all in this together, and I really appreciate you all being here and actually making this possible. Okay, and we hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful holiday. We probably won't be back on the air until after the Christmas holidays. There's a lot going on. But we intend to be back here and sharing with you and having you share with us as well. All right, thanks so much, everyone. We really appreciate you. And remember to keep finding the joy and enjoying your journey. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.